At Farm to Table, we know how confusing healthcare is. We're here to simplify the healing process. We believe that healthcare should be simple. It should help people feel better. We listen deeply and take the time needed with each and every patient. We work together to develop a plan that fits into each patient's life and helps them to feel better faster. That's why we started the Table Talk podcast, to gather around the table with you, whether you're on your way to work, rocking a baby, or taking a stroll. We want to come together and learn about using a new healthcare approach that focuses on finding the treatment for the root cause of your symptoms. The journey for each person is unique, but together we can thrive. All right. Welcome to Back to the Table Talk podcast. And my name is Melody Hartzler, and I am the owner of Farm to Table. And I'm here again with two of my pharmacists on the Farm to Table team, which you heard from before. So Dr. Sarah Botchelfner is back, as well as Dr. Megan Morrison. And so Sarah is in Montana, and then Megan, and she's also licensed in Utah, if you're listening from Utah. Dr. Morrison is licensed in Texas and resides in San Antonio. So I am here in Ohio, where it's now winter. We got a dusting of snow, and which you're probably listening to. By the time we publish this, it'll be even further into winter. We'll be really ready to flee the coop, but I'm ready to go to Florida like right now. But today we are going to talk about gut health. So this is often one of the most common reasons that patients present to our practice, and the most common symptom that they experience is somewhere in a gut symptom, whether it's constipation, diarrhea, bloating, abdominal pain, sometimes other things that are, you know, related to the GI tract. And so we're going to talk a little bit about how those other things or other symptoms could be potentially related to the gut, and to sort of give you a little bit of a foundation of what gut health looks like. So, and why we're so passionate about talking about it. So Megan, do you want to kick us off with sort of the historical pieces of gut health conversation?
Yeah. Great to be back. Okay. Gut health. I was just thinking, we recorded a podcast recently and I was like, let's give a shout out to the gut or a shout out to the microbiome.
Right.
So let's talk about it. A lot of people have probably seen or heard Hippocrates said all disease begins in the gut. And it's so true, because the gut is, I mean, it's all connected, for lack of a, you know, better term, like everything is connected in the body, and it all kind of starts in the gut. And so in functional medicine, we look at the gut usually at the very beginning. So without a proper functioning gut, good digestion, I mean, we're not going to get very far in healing. So about 90% of all health conditions and symptoms can be linked back to the gut. And 80% of our immune system is in the gut. And a lot of us are talking about the immune system. We have been for the past year and a half. And it's just so vital. Probably not something most people think about, it, the gut and the immune system, but 80% is housed in the gut. And so just critical for immunity. A lot of our neurotransmitters are made in the gut, which, you know, that affects mood. So just super important. I think we're still learning. There's so much more to learn and discover about all those little bugs in the gut and what they do. But I think there's over a trillion of them just kind of hanging out in there and doing their thing. So we need to give them the right environment, the right food, to let them grow and flourish and help us out.
Yeah. Like the neurotransmitter piece is, you know, an area of study that so many people are interested in right now. The gut brain axis is how it's termed in the blogosphere, but there's data to show that anxiety and depression can be alleviated at some levels by addressing, you know, this microbiome piece. And so that's the really cool part. I mean, we have some, you know, studies, smaller studies, they're not big, huge studies at this point, but a lot of good movement in that direction. So I would love to see this day where traditional medicine is prescribing probiotics for anxiety and depression as first line therapy. So maybe we'll see that in our lifetime. But I think that it speaks to really like there's so much involved in the process. And so we start even with just chewing. We chew and that starts to stimulate the flow of digestive enzymes and starts to get some of those hormones going. And so I think that's the part that we miss out on the most in our rapid, you know, society that's, you know, going from here to there. I'm guilty of eating breakfast in the car sometimes or eating at my desk, you know, when I first get to the office. But that piece of, I know I feel so much better if I'm just like sitting relaxed in casual conversation with the family or with friends eating than if I'm shoving down something just to get something down. So those are definitely good tips as far as ways to help support your gut is just chew your food. It's funny because my husband was editing our recordings for a functional medicine continuing education for pharmacists. And one of the speakers was talking about this whole thing and the chewing your food as it relates to patients with acid reflux. And just so funny. He was like fascinated by it. He's not a pharmacist or a healthcare person. He was like telling the kids about it at dinner. And so it's just, you know, it's maybe not common knowledge that process is so important to digestion. And then we could talk a little bit about the microbiome and what those bugs do for us. Sarah, do you want to go into that a little bit?
Yeah, not to take too long on that piece since we aren't going to be here for too long. But like Megan said, there's so many of them and they all have jobs. Like there's some, I'm working with a patient right now who's just a little kiddo and a couple of the bugs are undetectable and there are good bacteria and they're not actually in his gut at all. And they make the lining in the gut and they make something called butyrate, which has major functions in the gut and they're just totally missing. So he's having all these skin symptoms and it can be pretty much traced back to some stuff that he's got going on. So there's those things. And then some of the gut bacteria they actually make B vitamins and they help us to work with our food and just all sorts of
break it down.
Of things. Yep. Yes, breaking it down. And
yeah, butyrate is huge. So the good bacteria in our gut actually produce what's called short chain fatty acids. And short chain fatty acids they're basically food for the colon cells. So they feed the colon cells. So like Sarah mentioned, butyrate is one example of them. There's acetate and propionate ones as well. But basically they feed the colon cells, keep the colon cells healthy, but it comes from the microbiome. So if we don't have those microbiome cell, you know, the good microbiome, the good bacteria producing the butyrate, then our colon cells aren't healthy and they start to become damaged. We can start to see inflammation in those areas. But also interestingly, so this is one of my passions is the whole metabolic syndrome connection. So we also know that lack of butyrate or lack of short chain fatty acids affects our stimulation of hormones related to the endocrine system. So basically this hormone should stimulate another hormone called GLP-1 that tells your pancreas to make insulin and tells your brain that you're full. So just the fact that you don't have these bugs can affect how much insulin your body is making after meals, but it can also affect if you're feeling full after meals as well. So that piece is sometimes mind-boggling. There's also other digestive processes. The certain bacteria keep the gut at certain pH levels to help prevent overgrowth based on their byproducts. So it's, you know, it's fascinating how intricately everything was designed. And I think that's really speaks to all the complexities of our body. So awesome. So we talked about the chewing in the stomach. That's where we start to break down some of the protein and how vital stomach acid is. So stomach acid, you know, we have this somewhat misconception that all heartburn is related to high stomach acid, which it certainly could be, especially if someone has a very irritated esophagus that's damaged from erosion of, you know, the stomach acid going up the esophagus for a long time. Certainly any acid is going to not feel good on that tissue. But commonly a lot of maldigestion is related to some lack of stomach acid or not breaking down foods properly. So that's really where digestive enzymes can be helpful. Some digestive enzymes have a form of HCL that can provide a more acidic environment. It's important to have an acidic environment for many reasons. We talked about this, I think, in the nutrient depletion podcast, but things like iron, especially, and other, you know, nutrients need acid to be absorbed. So one of the most common nutrient depletions that we mentioned from a higher pH stomach because there's lack of acid, more basic stomach is iron deficiency and potentially, you know, other B vitamins and even calcium deficiency. We know there's more risk of osteoporosis and things in patients on long-term PPIs. So which are those drugs that make the stomach more basic and are often used for heartburn. And now with those medications available over the counter, no one's even monitoring necessarily how long patients are taking those, which is a little bit scary once we've learned, you know, at first thought, oh, these are pretty benign and it's pretty safe for people to just decide to take them themselves. But in reality, long-term use of them can be pretty detrimental to your overall health. So some people will recommend 12 weeks on it. And, you know, and maybe there's a time and a place for calming down some things. If we're treating H. pylori, sometimes that's part of a protocol. But other than that, it's really not ideal unless someone has really significant erosion, like I mentioned, and that's often called Barrett's esophagus. So we can definitely go into heartburn in another episode, more in depth, but lots of things to think about there. But then further down the small intestines, when the fats and carbohydrates and those peptides all start turning into smaller molecules, and that's really where the fat digestion, you know, really takes play. And that's partially due to the bile. Bile is like soap. If you think about, like, it's like an emulsifier. And so it breaks up that fat and helps us to digest that. And so also other enzymes like lipase can help digest that. So that really, you know, helps things to start to be absorbed. And you think, oh, maybe I don't want to absorb fat. Well, you do want to absorb fat because that's where your fat soluble vitamins need you to have fat to be absorbed. And also you need healthy fats. You need healthy omega-3s, and even some of the omega-6s are really important part of controlling our inflammation in our body and our brain function and, you know, cognitive function. So we need to have fat in our diet. So if you learned one thing, don't eat a super low fat diet. And I'm sure we'll talk about stress sometime today too, which we talk about on every podcast. So those are always, always the takeaways. So any other thoughts? Oh, I think we covered pretty well, like what's happening in the gut. We can talk a little bit about when the gut becomes damaged. That is when we get concerns for the inflammation can happen. And then what we see is that these proteins cannot break down, they don't get broken down into small particles, and they start to cross into the bloodstream in larger, you know, larger whole proteins. And that's where we really get this revving up of the immune system. And so it's called intestinal hyperpermeability, almost like the gut becomes sort of like a sponge and things can go through instead of having to be broken down. And that's when the immune system thinks all these things are foreign, even though, you know, you may have eaten dairy all your life or gluten all your life, but when the gut becomes damaged from one thing or another, in which we can mention some of those things, then the immune system gets on this overdrive. And that's what starts to see, you know, in Sarah's patient that she mentioned, eczema, you know, is one example of a side effect of symptom that comes from really this intestinal hyperpermeability, but allergies can be related to it. So can other headaches and fatigue and things like that. But you guys want to talk about a little bit of like how we get into that damage to the gut or what causes damage to the gut?
Sure. So like initially just digestion, I heard the analogy of a donut, and you're looking inside of a donut, and the inside of a donut is where all of your food is going through. And then you have the space that the nutrients that you're trying to get from your food needs to get through, right? So that's like the process. It goes all the way through and then it gets to the small intestine, and it's got the carpeting, like the shag carpet, that's what they call the brush border of the intestines. So those are sticking out, and those do the additional kind of breaking down of all the food. And, you know, there's all of the enzymes and the stomach acid and everything, like the whole process that she's just described. And then you get to this part, and sometimes when you're eating rushed or you have inflammation, it can break down these parts of your intestines, and then they become thinner. And once you get through that shag carpeting, you get to kind of a cheesecloth, and it's thin enough that the nutrients will go through, but big chunks won't go through. Well, with the inflammation and kind of the roughing up of the side of the donut and right onto that cheesecloth, you can kind of rip some holes into that through just, you know, years of eating a certain way or eating something that's that you're sensitive to, or not fully sitting and digesting your food. And then those holes allow the food that you're eating to go through. And so the foods that you're eating end up in your bloodstream, and they're not supposed to. The nutrients are, and those things are supposed to, but the rest of it is just supposed to pass on through. It's not actually supposed to be seen by your body. And so then it is seeing all of this food and it's foreign objects. And now it's all of a sudden thinking that that dairy and gluten that you've been eating your whole life now is a thing that is really problematic for the body, because it's seeing it in the bloodstream. And so now it's causing a reaction toward those foods.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of like, we call them atopic conditions, but the asthma, allergies, eczema sort of all go into that category of this like inflammation from an allergic response. And certainly there's a more immediate allergic response versus this more delayed allergic response that often happens with the gut food sensitivities, but it can definitely be there. And, you know, some of the other things that I think about from why are we in this place to begin with? How did our guts look like this? You know, we have the fact that a lot of C-sections happen across the world. And in the C-section, there is no swallowing of that vaginal fluid. And so the baby doesn't get that seeding of the gut with those bacteria. Instead, they start just picking up bacteria from their environment. And sometimes they know that the flora of a baby that was vaginally delivered versus C-section is different, although now I would say that sometimes even the vaginal delivery kids are also set up poorly, like my child, because my gut was in bad shape. And so, you know, and my flora, so that's what she started with. But there are ways to intervene, which we can talk on a further podcast, but we'll talk about all about babies maybe someday. But looking at other things, stress is a huge thing. So stress impairs stomach acid, which can cause the pH to be higher, affect, you know, the bacterial growth in the small intestine and cause things to get out of balance. There's also antibiotic use, which you could talk all day about, overuse of antibiotics, and also pesticides and other chemicals, you know, that are disrupting the microbiome. So there's a lot that could be contributing to this. And it's a generational thing too. So as the generations pass down this bacteria in the gut continue, you know, it's hard to replace once it's disappeared. And we know the gut microbiome, people with diabetes looks different than people without diabetes, the less bifidobacterium. So there's lots of these chronic disease connections. So lots of connections to the gut. I would say a lot of my hypothyroid patients, people with autoimmune disorders, like we always talk about the gut when it comes to autoimmune disease, because what happens is this inflammation that starts in this intestinal permeability piece that just keeps sort of building on itself into the point where the immune system is recognizing these things that are not like actual allergens, then it starts to attack our own cells too, when it sort of gets out of whack or goes awry. So that's where looking at the gut for patients with autoimmune disease and addressing things and getting it rebalanced can really help prevent, really help, you know, our attempts to prevent. I don't know if we have strong data, but attempts to prevent further development of autoimmune, but we do have data and a clinical experience to show that it really improves the symptoms of the patient's autoimmune. And also many patients go into remission, you know, with some of their symptoms. So people with rheumatoid arthritis, people that have other conditions, like making these changes has been really impactful for them. I mean, it's not an approved treatment or anything like that, but there's definitely nutritional approaches that have worked for people. So moving on to focus specifically on the gut, Megan, do you want to talk about sort of your like tips for, you know, how people can implement like today? They want to take care of their gut better. Like, what can they do?
Sure. So there's nothing groundbreaking about what I'm about to talk about, but you know, like Melody mentioned earlier, I think most of us just kind of forget about these things, and they really can have a profound effect on our gut. And we need to really start with some of these things before moving on to supplements and testing. And I mean, there's so much we can do to help our gut, but let's start here with these foundational things. And so hopefully after you listen to this, we'll all be sitting down to eat. Don't be standing up over the kitchen islands or, you know, the sink, shoveling food into your mouth. Let's sit down in a calm environment, turn the TV off and put your phones away for a little while. We almost need to be thinking about food or when we eat as like a meditative process. And a lot of people or a lot of other cultures around the world really do take the mealtime as this, it's a huge thing. You know, they sit down, they're not working while they're eating. They're with community, with, you know, people, friends and family, and they're taking their time and they can set their food down, set their fork down between bites and just slowly enjoy their food. And it's so important. Melody mentioned like eating in the car on the way to work. I am guilty of that. I remember, you know, when I used to work at the pharmacy and I'd be on the way to work, just like shoveling whatever I could, right? Because you get to work and we don't really get to eat or sit down and take a break. So I had to get something in me before work started. And that's just is not good for the gut. And some other, you know, just basic dietary principles that we can implement to benefit the microbiome. Diversity is key. So we really want a lot of different foods, especially plants, in our diet. And, you know, I know there are many diets where you may have to cut out some things for a certain while, depending on health situations and health issues you may have. But the goal should always be to add in more food. We don't want you just eating rice and chicken for the rest of your life. We also need to be eating fiber. I think I read today, like, we get, I don't know, 18 to maybe 20 grams of fiber in America, and or maybe even lower than that. And fiber is huge. It not only is food for the little bugs in our gut, but it helps us stay regular and just, you know, helps with detoxification, so many things. So fiber is so important. Protein, you know, if you choose to eat meat, we're not going to talk about all the different diets out there and what is best. Although I don't think there's one best diet out there, but protein, if you choose to eat meat and seafood, quality is important. So much of the meat supply here in the US is just loaded with hormones and antibiotics and stuff that we don't want to be putting in our bodies. Let's see, if you can eat seasonally, that is great. This one's a little, I'll admit, it's hard for me because we can have all the fruits and vegetables all year long, right? Like, we're lucky that we have that now. But if you eat what is in season, that is really when they have their highest nutrient content, and local food. So maybe shopping at a farmer's market or growing your own food. That's a lot of fun. And getting rid of any foods that you're sensitive to or you're allergic. I mean, working on healing the gut, we would hope that we could add in some foods after doing some kind of gut healing protocol, but removing those triggers and letting your gut heal for a while is very important.
Awesome. Awesome. Sarah, what would you add to that?
Best tips. Yeah. We said we were going to talk about stress. Yeah. I think we're all in a little bit of a stress, and often, like we said, we just kind of rush to the table and we start eating. So I think trying to exit that stress mode, and you can't exit it when you're multitasking, like she said, that is very hard for a lot of us to just kind of, okay, I'm eating now. But that's how the digestive process starts. Like, even by just looking at the food, smelling the food. So sitting down and just being like, okay, I really am just going to focus for just these like 10 minutes when I eat this food and only focus on that. And taking 10 deep breaths before you sit down to eat is often the best trick that you need, because when we're stressed, we really, really need those nutrients, because we're blowing through the vitamin C, the B vitamins. We're just tossing that stuff out. We're trying to keep up with that. So we really need to absorb that from our food. So sitting down and exiting the fight or flight mode and entering the rest and digest, because you cannot digest your food if you are keeping in that space. So slowing down, taking those 10 deep breaths before you eat, and then just eat. And then your food can actually work for you. And then you can get back to work. And that is fine.
Yes. Yes. I know. I need to be better about like stepping away from the desk and eating. So I will say, sometimes like if you're like having like a meeting with others and talking and engaging, like sometimes that is better than sitting at your desk reading email while you're trying to do it. So
yeah, I guess awesome. another one would probably be to make sure that you're eating organic as much as possible, because then you're not running into other things that can stress your body too. And going to the environmental working group's website is a good place to start for that. And just avoiding all of the dirty dozen, always buying that in organic form. And then exercise is so key. In fact, they found that exercise can actually, if you have this leaky gut or intestinal permeability that we're talking about, exercise can actually counteract that. So if you stay active, I mean, I know exercise is sometimes a hard word for people, but movement, any type of moving your body and just staying active can actually help really boost the gut and the immune system in the gut and all of the pieces associated with that microbiome that we were talking about. It can really, really ensure that you have that on your side. So another reason to exercise.
Yes, yes, for sure. And we've been talking a little about this 5R protocol. So if you haven't heard about a 5R protocol, or I guess we've talked about a gut healing protocol. So I'll tell you that the common word that you might hear in the functional medicine space is called a 5R protocol. But basically, this is just the different steps in a healing protocol. So in the first part, that's potentially removing irritating foods, you know, potentially might involve, if we do some gut testing, which we'll talk about, might involve some antimicrobials to help decrease, you know, some of the bad bacteria. It might involve the stress reduction. So removing the stress and, you know, addressing the stress. So those are some of the things in that. So first part, but then there's also this replace part that if we find someone has low certain digestive enzymes or low stomach acid, using certain foods and nutrients, could use bitter food to help stimulate bile flow, or we could try to do that with bitters in a supplement form or other, you know, digestive enzymes. But addressing those nutrient depletion comes as part of that step. And then we get to, you know, some of the other steps that are included. And these aren't all necessarily just in a row. They may be sort of simultaneously, which is why sometimes these protocols can be somewhat overwhelming at the beginning, but we have to repopulate. So we try to do that as much from food as possible. So using prebiotic, probiotic foods, if those are tolerated, sometimes they're hard to tolerate for patients. So we have to start with lower amounts of probiotics, but some of those prebiotic, probiotic foods would be like kimchi or sour, you know, raw sauerkraut. Challenge being that cabbage is sort of a fermentable food. So sometimes it doesn't sit as well with people, but we can use yogurt if people, and specifically we like to use homemade yogurt that's been fermented for 24 hours. It has a whole ton more bugs, billions of bugs than the kind that's just fermented for 4 to 6 hours that's at the grocery store. So those are options. And then, you know, repairing the gut. So we also can use probiotic supplements, which certainly is sometimes easier because we don't always get in those fermented foods depending on how well we are with the diet. So sometimes people like to choose to supplement that. But as far as repairing nutrients, there are certain nutrients, you know, foods that are high in vitamin A and C and E, and zinc are really helpful. Bone broth is one new, you know, nutrient-rich food that has a lot of natural glutamine and collagen in it. But sometimes we use supplements that contain the glutamine, collagen, aloe vera, some of those types of nutrients. They're called mucolytics, but they help just that, like Sarah was mentioning, that that person has no bacteria that produce that mucus that sort of helps protect the gut lining. And so we try to help soothe the gut lining, calm down some of that inflammation with these particular herbs. And then, you know, the rebalance is the fifth part. So sometimes you'll see the 4R protocol, but that fifth R is so important. And that's that rebalance. So like Sarah was mentioning, the stress management, sleep is huge. So if you don't sleep well, it can affect your hormone levels as far as how hungry you are the next day. It can affect lots of different metabolic processes, but it can also put more stress on your body, which can impair, you know, gut function. So in order to heal, our bodies need sleep. And that number is different for everybody, but it's somewhere between probably 6.5 or probably 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night. If you haven't checked out things like the Whoop band or Oura ring, those can be really great tools. We have no affiliation with those at this time, but this can be really great tools to monitor your sleep, see how your recovery is, see if you're actually getting into those stages of sleep. I'm really excited about the next version of the Oura ring because it does even better tracking and better temperature recording. So I'm excited to see the difference there. But other things, you know, your relationships, moving more, like Sarah mentioned, I mean, that's super important to the rebalancing. Tonight, I did not sleep well last night, so I did not put myself through a big workout, but just went downstairs when my husband took my daughter to dance class and I took my son downstairs to our home gym area and he just played with a remote control car while I did a yoga. So I might've been hit by a remote control car a few times, but you just have to like make it work in your schedule and get that movement in. So I did just a 20-minute yoga routine to like get some movement and stretching in. I did some photography this weekend and I could definitely feel my legs were tight from all of the ups and downs chasing my children across the studio. So, all right. Anything else you guys want to add with the 5-hour protocol or thoughts on gut health?
I think we've already mentioned it quite a bit, but I really can't emphasize enough the stress piece.
Yes.
You know, and I have had my own health issues and I'm just always working on trying to help my gut. And just the gut brain access is huge. And I don't think we can get very far if we're not also focusing on that mental piece and the stress piece. So
yeah.
Don't overlook it. I know, you know, we all hear stress is bad, but it really just does take a toll on the body and the gut in particular. So.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like just to think about, I think there's been studies where people are like just in a stressful experience and they were able to measure, you know, changes in their microbiome from like entering the ICU and they had changes in there regardless of that they got antibiotics, just the stressful experience of being there was damaging to the gut. So if you have been in those situations, whether it's a divorce or a traumatic experience or just the day-to-day stress over and over of a job, like it's definitely has an impact on your health over time. I know Sarah mentioned the B vitamins. A lot of people are B vitamin depleted when they're in those stressful situations. I was after going through a pregnancy and then having a stressful, you know, health experience and getting to the point where I'm like, okay, I don't have enough of B vitamins and that can impact your fatigue and your energy. Energy made in your cells need lots of different types of B vitamins to do the cycle to create our cellular energy. So awesome. Well, the last thing I think we wanted to mention on the podcast, I know we can go further into depth into things like SIBO and allergies and heartburn at another time, but we wanted to mention testing options. So a lot of people, when they come to us, they want to know, you know, what's going on in the gut. And there's certainly a few different ways we can look at that. One is called a comprehensive stool test. So a comprehensive stool test is a stool sample. There are several different companies that offer these stool samples. We like to use companies that use a technology called PCR, which actually looks for the DNA of bacteria. And some of the companies we use also do a culture. And so we can look at the microbiome is called the commensal bacteria or what should be there. So we get a picture of what is there. And sometimes, like Sarah mentioned, we see that there's a lack of bacteria in certain categories. So like a whole category that someone's supposed to have is like not even present in the sample. And sometimes there's off the charts levels of these commensal bacteria, which could be contributing to someone's symptoms, even if they are normal, should be there bacteria, it could be too much and could be causing lots of extra fermentation of sugars and bloating and things like that. So we look at that. These tests also will measure pancreatic elastase, which is a common measurement. You can actually get pancreatic elastase from a stool sample at a local lab. So if you know, LabCorp, CompUnit, Quest Diagnostics, places like that, you can get a general stool sample type test that could look for things like calprotectin, which is a measurement of inflammation. Oftentimes they can look like for lipase and elastase, some of those enzymes, because in patients that have severe pancreatic dysfunction, we look at those numbers to determine if they have what's called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. So they're not producing enough of this to like even come close to digesting their food. And there's like actually prescription digestive enzymes, but that's not the case for most people. Most people fall in the like suboptimal category. We talked about this before. There's oftentimes like diagnostic level of low vitamin or low this that contributes to a specific condition. But oftentimes we find that people just don't have enough to have that optimal health. And that's really where we want to help people, you know, not that we're not going to help people with have a condition, but what we can do to help support the body's natural physiology is really help people get from that suboptimal to like the thriving point. And so, so on the stool test, also we can see inflammation markers on the comprehensive stool test. So we can see that calprotectin number, but we can also see sometimes other numbers like lactoferrin is an inflammation marker in the gut. We can see what's called SIGA, which is the immunoglobulin. So we can see, is your immune system kicking in and sort of being affected by that intestinal hyperpermeability? And then we can also see one called EPX on some of the tests, which EPX is eosinophilic protein X, and it can be related to allergies and immune response as well. So it's sort of nonspecific. So it could be related to any types of allergies, but it is there. And so we also can see those short chain fatty acids, which I love that part, to be able to see the short chain fatty acids, especially when I'm helping someone that has metabolic syndrome alongside these gut issues, to be able to address that. And then lastly, you know, we look for parasites on those tests and other pathogens like bacteria. Some of the tests look at different viruses. Some tests look at H. pylori, which is a common bug that can contribute to that, what's called gastritis or inflammation of the stomach and the heartburn. And a few of the tests do the PCR. So they look for the DNA of these particular pathogens. And then one of the tests actually looks for the DNA and does a culture. So it does a culture to see if anything grows out on culture, which is basically like in a petri dish, and looks at that. So there are certainly limitations. I mean, it's definitely the most comprehensive look that you can get at someone's gut health. But there's certain limitations, like when they grow things on the petri dish and they say, oh, this antibiotic or this herb like killed that. Well, that, you know, in the petri dish that happens. But when we do that in someone's gut where there's trillions of bacteria, like Megan mentioned, bacteria form matrix and biofilms and other things. And so there's yeast and other bugs present. So the efficacy of some of those things is challenging to know for sure, you know, based on those cultures. So some people don't like the ones that have culture. I love if I can have both, you know, if I can have both that PCR, which is again, looking for the DNA of that bacteria and telling you how much is there versus, you know, and also having the culture is nice too. So working with a functional medicine provider can help you be able to get one of those tests ordered. So you can do that with one of us or another functional medicine provider, but that gives you a really great place to start. And we can also do those again. So we can see what it looks like now, what it looks like 6 months after your interventions and see the improvement. So I like having that data alongside the data of like, oh, wow, I'm feeling better. Like I don't have diarrhea and constipation. And it's amazing. Like it's not that every single patient after the first 5-hour protocol comes back and says, I'm magically healed, you know, but there is a good chunk of them that do and say like, okay, this is game changer. Like I'm feeling so much better. I don't have any of these gut symptoms anymore. So that's what I live for. I love those conversations, but sometimes it does take a little bit longer for people to reach their goals. And then another type of testing is called breath testing, which that can be a little bit more challenging and is a little bit more debated as far as in the medical community, how beneficial that is. But we do use that sometimes for people that we suspect SIBO, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And it's basically involved drinking a sugary solution called lactulose and then breathing into tubes that show us the gas. So if you have hydrogen or methane gas, it can tell us if we have too much of that, potentially that there's too much bacteria in the small intestine, which is that first part after the stomach. So there's lots of cool research going on in that space. There's a research institute called Cedars-Sinai out in California that is studying all of this stuff. And so I think it's going to get better and better and better with respect to that. There's other gases like sulfur gas that can be involved in that too. And so currently it's a little harder to nail that down, but there's lots of like little things we can see in the stool sample results that can also sort of point back to some of those imbalances. So it's really, we do believe that it's important to, if you're having severe symptoms, get tested. And you guys can chime in on this too, because I know this is like practitioner specific, but if I have someone that's sitting in front of me with a lot of symptoms, testing is not cheap and it's not always covered on insurance. A couple of the companies that do the GI comprehensive tests do take insurance, but sometimes insurance doesn't cover it. And so you don't really know until it's billed and you call your insurance company and say, is this covered? And they're going to like, we don't know what you're talking about. But there are specific codes called CPT codes that are associated with the test that we could give you a list of and you could check, but it's a little challenging to get that kind of information from insurance companies. So if that's not an option, there's certainly a lot we can do without testing. Yes, testing is probably going to give us a more clear picture and maybe get us to our goals faster because we aren't going to be, you know, second guessing ourselves. So it may actually save money in the long run to test because you're not going to try this and try this and try this and, oh, wow, this is what I really needed. But that doesn't mean that I haven't worked with patients and empirically done some kind of 5-bar protocol that has worked or hasn't worked. So it's possible, but you know, testing definitely gives us a little bit clearer insight into that path. But do you guys have any comments on that?
That sounds pretty accurate.
All right.
I was just going to say, I think everyone can benefit from a 5-bar protocol, yes. You know, maybe not specifically like antimicrobials or herbs, but there's so many things in that protocol that we can all benefit from. So,
yeah, it's sort of what we do in the 14-day reset, which mm-hmm. will be happening around the time this podcast is released again. But this is really a time where we like sort of remove some of those more offensive foods, focus on nourishing the body with lots of good fiber and protein and helping reduce the stress and sleeping better. So we do the 14-day reset twice a year. So definitely check that out and definitely consider joining us if you think you need a reset. Because like Megan said, we could probably all use reset at different points because we all get off track and starts to get into the holidays and then you come off of that and there's lots of amazing food and lots of stress, you know, about shopping and lack of sleep or you're traveling. There's lots of reasons, but even other times of the year, I know for March, for me, I get off track because I have two kids that have birthdays in March and my husband's birthday is in March. And I feel like we're celebrating something like every weekend. this is like one big part. We just have one big party one day and just like get it over with. Right. But yeah. So, I mean, there's different reasons people get off track. It's always good to like draw it back in and try to do something specific. And I think with that, this, you know, these protocols are individualized when functional medicine providers work with patients, you know, like in our practice, this is individualized to you. This is about your microbiome, what's going on in your life, what stressors that you have. And so it's not just this generic protocol that's supposed to work for everybody. And that's really the difference in functional medicine is that this is individualized and not public health, everyone needs this type thing. While there's a lot of generic generalization type things that we made when it gets down to what products you take or what timing and how long you do something for, you know, all of that's going to depend on, you know, your history and your story, which we talk about a lot. So awesome. Well, if you need to find us, you can find us at farmtotable, farmtotable.life. And if you're interested in learning more about functional medicine, check out our downloadable discovery class. And if you're ready to have a conversation with one of our providers, definitely book a 15-minute discovery call and learn more about how we can help you improve your gut symptoms or whatever else you're dealing with. So hope you guys have a great rest of your day and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. We're excited you are on your journey with us. Find us online at farmtotable.life, farm with a P, and on Instagram at farmtotableteam.